Morning is from the 15th chapter of Mark and also from the 17th chapter of Luke. Then they brought Jesus to the site of Golgotha, which means skull place. They tried to give him wine, drugged with myrrh, but he would not take it. Then they nailed him to the cross and divided up his garments by rolling dice for them to see what each should take. It was about 9 in the morning when they crucified him. The inscription leading the charge read, "The King of the Jews." With Jesus, they crucified two robbers, one at his right and one at his left. People going by insulted Jesus, shaking their heads and saying, "So you were going to destroy the temple and rebuild it in 3 days. Save yourself now by coming down from that cross." The chief priests and the religious scholars also joined in and jeered, "He saved others, but he can't save himself. Let the Messiah, the King of Israel, come down from that cross right now so that we can see it and believe in him." Those who had been crucified with him hurled the same insult. When noon came, darkness fell on the whole countryside and lasted until about 3 in the afternoon. At 3, Jesus cried out in a loud voice, "Eli, Eli, lama sabachthani?" Which means, my God, why have you forsaken me?" A few of the bystanders heard it and remarked, "Listen, he's calling on Elijah." Someone ran and soaked a sponge in sour wine and stuck it on a reed to try to make Jesus drink, saying, "Let's see if Elijah comes to take him down." Then Jesus uttered a loud cry and breathed his last. At that moment, the curtain in the sanctuary was torn in two from top to bottom. And from Luke, "Those who try to save their lives will lose them, and those who lose their lives will save them." The Gospel of the Lord.
I don't mind, I'm going to sit for the sermon. I don't know how this is going to work, but we'll try it. I can see most of you, I think. Maybe like right here. Yeah. Well, after our sermon, each week during this Lenten time, we're going to have a time for reflection. And so in your bulletins, you should have received a little piece of paper. And after the sermon, or maybe even during the sermon, I'm going to invite you to focus on things that fill us, like ego, fear of being unloved, worry of not measuring up, or need to be emptied so that we might live more fully. And then after the sermon, when you come up for communion, you'll have an opportunity to take whatever you've written on your piece of paper, and there are 3 crosses in our sanctuary, and you're going to have an opportunity to go and put this on the cross. So just keep that in mind as you're thinking about this theme of emptiness today during the sermon. And preparing to move back to Oklahoma, Dana and I decided we would start packing up our belongings in boxes, but only allow the boxes to be stacked in the spare bedroom from floor to ceiling, because we did not want the whole house to feel empty when we still needed to live there for another month and a half. However, if someone visited our house, they would not have been able to tell that we were preparing to move. The purple and white Christmas trees were still lit up every night in the living room, and the house still felt cozy. We leased our house from a rental company, so each week we'd have 4 to 5 showings to potential renters. Week after week, the wall of boxes in the spare bedroom grew larger, and the items on the bookshelves and the counters disappeared throughout the rest of the house. Eventually, the trees came down, and at last, the paintings hanging on the walls were packed away. We had 21 house showings in 35 days. Our anxiety increased because we were responsible for the rent through June, unless someone else moved into the house. It wasn't until our home was completely empty and we had crossed state lines that finally new renters signed a lease. I know there's entire businesses involved to staging houses just right so that potential buyers can see all the possibilities and decide to purchase a property. But in our case, it took a completely empty canvas for the renters to be able to imagine our former home as their new home. Our theme for this Sunday is the gift of emptiness. Last Wednesday, we had 25 persons discuss their thoughts and experiences with emptiness during our Lenten book study. We talked about the difference between a physical space being empty versus one's heart, mind, or soul journeying through emptiness. For some, a physically empty space provided peace of mind and a sigh of relief. Time and again, as my role as a pastor, I have encountered family members who are left with the responsibility of emptying out the belongings of a loved one's house after they pass away. If the house is chock full with every nook and cranny overflowing with material and sentimental items, emptiness is often the objective and the goal towards which to work. When the house is finally free of every last box, bookshelf, and bobby pin, the empty space can feel like a worthy accomplishment, a sigh of relief, a sight to behold. However, when dealing with feelings of emptiness, we would often rather avoid them as much as possible. When I left my previous church, I did a lot of research and contemplation on how to best adhere to appropriate ethical guidelines and expectations for a departing pastor. The basics included the expectation that I would limit my interactions with my former church members so they could foster healthy bonds with their new pastor and allow room for the new pastoral leadership to take hold. This meant that I wouldn't be providing pastoral care, counseling, or rituals for former congregants unless there was a special reason, an arrangement with their current pastor. This all made sense to me, but the piece that I had a harder time wrapping my heart around was social media. Since I'd first started my call, Facebook had become an important way that I was present, accessible, and informed about the ins and outs of my congregation each day. I knew that my online relationship with them would need to change so that I would have room in my heart and head to get to know all of you when I arrived. For this reason, it was decided that I would release my former congregants from all social media for the first year and a half after their new pastor arrived. Knowing that each day I spent in person or online with them was coming to a close, I cherished each update and important post. After it was announced that I'd be coming to Cathedral of Hope and Church of the Open Arms, I began to receive dozens of new Facebook friend requests each day. At first, I accepted them as they came through, but then I started to notice something. I was seeing all of your updates and important posts, and I didn't know you yet. At the same time, I started seeing less of my current congregation's lives. There was only so much one could see at one time on Facebook, unless you committed to spending hours making sure you didn't miss anything. I decided to put a hold on accepting new requests until I had actually moved here and started my new call. There was exactly 2 weeks in between my last day in Rochester and my first day here in Oklahoma City. I knew for many reasons that I had to release my former congregants, but I just couldn't bring myself to do it at first. It wasn't until the third night after my last day that I built up the courage to begin the slow process of letting go. I was at a continuing education class in Minneapolis for 3 days after my final day at my previous church. After I finished the class, I headed back to my hotel room and sat on my bed with my laptop open, reluctantly determined to do what I thought was the best for both of us. I started to cry, and one by one, I released each person. Saying a prayer for their future and well-being until our paths crossed again. As I came across those who I'd been closest with, I just couldn't bring myself to do it, so I bypassed them until the very end. At the close of the evening, I had released close to 500 persons. I felt sick to my stomach and free all at the same time. I wondered if my Facebook feed would be completely empty the following day. I woke the next morning, clicked on the blue blocks icon on my phone, and opened up my feed. To my surprise, it was not completely empty. There were updates from persons that I hadn't noticed before. However, the absence of so many familiar faces I had journeyed with for 6 years left me with a hollow feeling. Although the letting go had begun, I knew it would take time for my heart to get used to the feelings that accompanied this new reality. If you studied biology or cosmology in high school, you learned that atoms contain a nucleus made of protons and neutrons and an electron cloud. The distance between the atom's nucleus and its circulating electron cloud is roughly the equivalent of the distance between the Earth and the Sun. Seen from another perspective, if you set a grape seed in the center of a football stadium, representing the nucleus of an atom, the perimeters of the stadium would be its electron cloud. The translation is the atoms which make up our bodies are comprised of 99.9% of empty space. To the best of our knowledge, the same is true of the universe. As big as the planets, stars, and galaxies are, 99.9% of it is vast emptiness. Yet in the midst of all this emptiness, we exist. Our bodies and souls are alive. And Parker Palmer reminds us in our contemporary reading, our souls, like a wild animal, learn how to survive even in the midst of all this emptiness. Elm says we literally embody the message that within great emptiness resides great fullness. Our sacred texts contain some of the most compelling and moving stories of emptiness and fullness in all of literature. One of those stories we will save for Easter, that of the empty tomb. Another we will dwell upon today, because I know the plot line whenever I hear the words, "Then they brought Jesus to the site of Golgotha." I want to call out, "Stop! Be careful! Don't go there! Please listen to me! It's going to be bad. Very, very bad." But my pleas do not pause the story. Jesus finds himself in the worst of all situations. Surrounded by loved ones who were powerless to prevent his death. Betrayed by those he had poured his life energy into. Feared and misunderstood by the powers that be, his body and flesh attacked by men who mocked, stripped, and beat him. This week I asked myself how many have found themselves in this situation in our modern world. How many family members have looked on in agony, helpless to prevent their loved one's death? How many beloveds are feared or misunderstood by the powers that be? How many in our society are mocked and attacked? Some expected that Jesus would have the power to save himself from this torture. They jeered, "He saved others, but he cannot save himself." I could not imagine feeling more empty, desolate, deserted, or abandoned than he did in those moments. His words tear at my soul, my God, why have you forsaken me?" Forsake, it's a familiar word to most of us, even though we don't use it much outside the church. It means to leave someone or something entirely. Jesus asks his higher power, the one he calls Abba, an intimate term for father. Why have you left me altogether? When was the last time that you felt this way? Empty and alone, God forsaken. One of the most poignant entries in Eric Allen's chapter on emptiness speaks to this passage. He says, in that great and terrible moment of emptiness, not even Jesus could find God. Yet for the last 2,000 years, Christians have insisted that the cross is not the end of the story, but the beginning of a new one. Not because Jesus found God as he stared from the cross into that vast emptiness of the heavens, but because from within this great emptiness, God found Jesus. The message could not be more profound. If you yearn to find God, get empty. Let God find you. Sometimes we fear that God is not searching for us. We may not even realize that we're hiding from God or from others. We get bogged down by our struggles, our uncertainties, our doubts, our emptiness. We think no one notices infinitesimal me, just a small speck within a colossal universe. Elms tells the story of his friend Bruce Van Blair, who found it hard to sleep one night. He could not stop thinking about a friend he'd been out of touch with, who lived 2 hours away. Finally, at 1:30 in the morning, he woke his wife up and told her he needed to go and visit his friend. Right now, in the middle of the night, 2 hours away. It made no sense to either of them, but he drove in the dark, arriving at the front doorstep at 3:30 in the morning. He knocked 3 times until his friend answered, bewildered. It was an odd time to visit, yet all seemed fine. They sat and drank coffee for over an hour, catching up. Eventually, Bruce drove home, confused at why he'd acted so impulsively. Time passed. The event faded to the background. 3 months later, Bruce's friend stopped by and opened up about the truth of that night. He had not been asleep at 3:30 in the morning, nor had he been honest with his friend. He'd been the farthest from fine that one could be. In fact, he'd been sitting in his dining room in the dark with a loaded revolver in his hand. Make no mistake, God searches for us always. And on our most emptiest of moments, God uses every person, song, creature, or event possible that will allow itself to be an instrument of God to break into our lives and embrace us when we are at our most vulnerable. When thinking further about the theme of emptiness this week, I looked around at our everyday experiences. When our gas tanks are empty, we stop and fill them up. When our hard drive is too full, we delete the excess or purchase extra storage space. Depending upon our stage in life, some of us struggle with a calendar that is too full, while others with a week that looks too bare. Several of you have gently but persistently nudged me, asking, "Pastor, we're so happy with all that you're doing for our churches, but when will your day off be?" I was reading a poem during my devotional time this week entitled Rest by William C. Martin. It says, if you fill your calendar with important appointments, you will have no time for God. If you fill your spare time with essential reading, you will starve your soul. If you fill your mind with worry about budgets and offerings, the pain in your chest and the ache in your shoulders will betray you. Work a modest day, then step back and rest. This will keep you close to God. Mondays are now my day off. I know that unless I take time to be emptied out, I will have no space to be filled up with that which nourishes and replenishes. Since moving back to Oklahoma, I've had to remember how thirsty this heat makes me. Twice and one day last week, I went to a fast food drive-thru to order a soda because I was so parched. This is not usual behavior for me, and I didn't want it to become a habit. The next morning, I got a metal water bottle from our cupboard and filled it up to keep in the car or my office for when I get thirsty. I'd been meditating on emptiness, and as I put the metal bottle underneath the stream of water, I could sense when the bottle was almost full without even looking inside the brim. There was a sound the water made as it hit the empty cup, and the pitch of the sound changed steadily the more full the bottle became. I could have filled this bottle with my eyes closed and known just by listening when it had gone from empty to full without ever glancing in its direction. I wondered, what does it sound like when something inside of us changes from empty to full? How do you listen for the pitch of that sound, of the sound of a life filled up or overflowing? It's amazing that in this universe where our bodies and galaxies are 99.9% empty, we can reside with great fullness at times. We try to balance the emptiness and fullness in our physical living spaces and within our own hearts, minds, and spirits. Maybe we are purposefully engaging in a time of emptying, packing metaphorical boxes from floor to ceiling, creating a blank canvas in our lives from which to paint a new picture of what our future will look like. Maybe we're at that place of having to say goodbye to loved ones, the absence of their familiar faces leaving us feeling hollow. And we wonder if we'll ever get used to that particular experience of emptiness. We identify and follow a Son of God who found himself forsaken in the midst of emptying out his life on a wooden cross. And yet, in the midst of our emptiest of moments, those times when we cry out, "Why have you left me altogether?" God finds us. Even though we are infinitesimal, a speck in the midst of vastness, a friend will drive 2 hours in the middle of the night because God troubles our hearts to reach out. When our internal tanks have been sitting on empty for far too long, we begin to hear the sounds of our life filling up with those things which nourish and replenish. The sound that water makes as it hits an empty cup becomes the pitch of our hearts moving from empty to full to overflowing. We live in a paradoxical world where even emptiness has gifts and blessings to offer. God be with us. Amen.